You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our second and final of two podcasts on advancing care for adults with limb-girdle muscular dystrophy, new therapies and insights hosted by Med Learning Group. This series is designed for general neurologists involved in the management of patients with LGMD. In the previous episode, we talked about the importance of genetic testing in the diagnosis of LGMD. In this one, we'll be talking about symptomatic therapies for LGMD and discussing the unique mechanisms of action of investigational therapies. We'll also discuss data on some ongoing studies as well. Let's get started. My name is Vaidehi and I will be the host of today's podcast. Joining me today is Dr. Nicholas E. Johnson. Dr. Johnson is Professor and Vice Chair of Research and Director, Center of Inherited Muscle Research, CIMR. He's also the George Bliley Research Chair at the Virginia Commonwealth University, Richmond, Virginia. Dr. Johnson, wonderful to speak with you again.
Thank you, Vaidehi. It's my pleasure to be here.
So in the last podcast, our focus was on accurately diagnosing LGMD. I'd like for us to focus on treatment of LGMD in this one. Can you tell us what an ideal treatment would look like?
Yeah, so I think, the limb-girdle muscular dystrophies are slowly progressive conditions. They really affect the skeletal muscle system, people's ability to walk, to use their arms, and eventually may lead to complications of breathing or cardiac function in some subtypes. So if you're thinking about, what do you want it from a viable therapy? We're looking for something that can improve the overall quality of life for individuals living with LGMD, that can improve their functional status. And I think as a corollary, these are debilitating disorders. They often lead to social isolation and difficulty maintaining adequate employment. So helping to improve their functional status is equally important. So really for us, treatment has these types of treatments, if it were possible, would facilitate patients' involvement, engagement, productivity in society, and would ultimately result in a decrease in healthcare or other social resources in the future of these patients. And so, when we've talked to patients in the past, I think many would say, if you can even slow down the progression, that'd be great. It'd be even better if you could stop it. And of course, aspirationally, we're always hoping to potentially reverse disease progression.
Yeah, that would be great. So currently, do we have therapies that work on LGMD?
So right now, there's no what we would consider to be a disease-modifying therapy that would address the underlying root cause of these disorders. But it is important that, through a multidisciplinary treatment approach that we use in our clinic and others through these MDA clinics, there is symptomatic management that can help improve quality of life and maintain functional abilities. So that can include things like physical and occupational therapy to support exercise and rehabilitation and provide assistive devices like ankle foot orthoses or canes or potentially wheelchairs. It's important to engage with respiratory support to monitor and address respiratory symptoms as they develop. And likewise, for those subtypes that do involve the cardiac system, to include cardiac monitoring and therapeutics, because a lot has been learned about medicines that may help slow the progression of cardiac myopathies that develop as a result of the muscular dystrophies. And then, of course, managing pain as it develops, nutritional support and psychological support are all really key parts. If you tick down that list, you would realize that having a neuromuscular neurologist, which really is the, typically the core clinical provider, is not sufficient to do all that work. And so, we really work as part of a multidisciplinary team with physical medicine and rehabilitation, with our cardiologists, with our pulmonologists and respiratory therapists, with folks who can survey and monitor for sleep apnea and address that as it develops. And, these are genetic conditions. And so working with genetic counseling is critical to both obtaining an accurate diagnosis, but also to assist those large families or any size family thinking about family planning or other affected family members.
So there's definitely a need for treatments that work specifically on LGMD then. So what kind of investigational drugs are we talking about? How are they, how do they work, for example?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's a couple different classes of therapies that we think about. So the one that I would say is both, you know, most consistently thought about, particularly for the recessive forms, limb-girdle, but also off, you know, really the furthest along is gene transfer therapy. So these are the, you know, an autosomal recessive limb-girdle muscular dystrophies, you're missing a functional gene that leads to the dysfunction of the muscle. And so using a vector like an adeno-associated virus may provide the opportunity to deliver the missing gene into the cell with either local or systemic injection. And the holy grail beyond gene transfer, which is done with an AAV virus and the gene expression is not integrated into the genome, so it's potentially expelled or lost as cells divide, would be gene editing, which is certainly much further behind. But beyond this kind of gene transfer, gene editing, other things can be thought of that of. So small molecules may act on DNA regulation or downstream pathways. Exon skipping or RNA inhibition, which has been tested and trialed in other forms of muscular dystrophy, like Duchenne muscular dystrophy, or in the case of RNA interference, myotonic dystrophy type 1 or FSHD, may be considered for appropriate subtypes with a deletion in the case of exon skipping or overexpression like a dominant form of limb-girdle muscular dystrophy in the case of RNA inhibition. And then beyond that, you know, there's lots of thoughts and talks about regenerative medicine, which would really be a stem cell transplant. But I think that's a little bit further away. So as I kind of alluded to, if you think about the various different forms of therapies that are being tested, again, the one that's most furthest along is this gene transfer idea using an adeno-associated virus. And so there's been preclinical work done by a couple different programs and for Calpain-3. Sarepta has a small program for dysferlin. There is also a program for beta sarcoglycan and alpha sarcoglycan that's being done actually in clinical phase trials right now by Sarepta. There are two different companies that are working on gamma sarcoglycan, that's Atomio and Sarepta, and two different companies that are also in clinical trials right now. And for FKRP or RZDR9, and that's AskBio and Atomio. And then beyond that, you know, additional programs are planned for genes like Inoculin 5. And so I think, you know, those are all quite promising in terms of thinking about, you know, those gene transfer therapies.
So can you share some clinical data on any of these treatments that you just discussed with our audience today?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's certainly been work with gene therapies in related disorders like spinal muscular atrophy or Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And in fairness, those programs are further ahead than, you know, many of the ones in the limb-girdle muscular dystrophies, but it doesn't mean that we can't talk about the work that's already been done and out there. And maybe one of the ones that's furthest along is a gene therapy for beta-sarcoglycan that's being conducted by Sarepta Therapeutics. The gene therapy name is so long that it's almost impossible to pronounce. If I kind of stumble over it, it's Bidristogene Zaraparvovec. It's, you know, I think these, yeah, those are quite long and challenging to pronounce. But you can just remember it as an AAV RH74 that would replace the full-length beta-sarcoglycan gene. And that study is in a phase 1-2 open-label study. And during that, you know, they treated multiple patients, 6 patients at a low and a high dose. In general, there were very few safety events in that cohort. And many of those would be ones that you would expect to see with any type of AAV gene therapy, like some GI distress in the first 90 days and elevation of the liver enzymes, all of which were treated during the course of the study. These are small cohorts, and so it is hard to get a lot of feedback in terms of how the muscle function is. But as a proxy for that, looking at the muscle biopsies, they were able to show an increase in the beta sarcoglycan expression from all the patients at 2 months. And then in terms of long-term follow-up, they lost one patient to follow-up at 2 years, but the remainder of the patients in both low and high dose cohorts did show an increase in protein expression. And in fact, for this particular program, there is a phase 3 trial that's underway.
Are there any other therapies that appear promising?
Yeah, so I think, there are some other small molecules that have been investigated. Here, maybe one of the most interesting ones is a medicine called Ribitol, or BBP-418, which is being sponsored by BridgeBio. The background kind of in terms of the pathophysiology here is that with LGMD-R9, you have a loss of FKRP, which is an enzyme that helps glycosylate or add sugars to the end of the alpha-DG protein. And the concept behind using Ribitol is basically overwhelm that less effective enzyme to add more of those sugars to the end of the alpha-DG protein. So it's really a ribose prodrug or a substrate designed to overwhelm it. And they did have a phase 2 open label study that suggested that it improved the disease at the molecular level with a very good safety response and some suggestive clinical activity, acknowledging that it was an open label trial. And that's now in a very large 36-month phase 3 clinical trial looking at change in physical function as well as the overall safety. So that's something to pay attention to. There have been a number of trials or thoughts around using steroids, which obviously have been shown to be quite effective in Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Here in limb-girdle muscular dystrophies, there's been much more mixed success. So there's an ongoing study looking at deflazacort that is ongoing. There has been some thoughts or idea behind using vamorolone, which is potentially less likely to have some of the off-target side effects associated with prednisone while still maintaining some of the benefits in terms of the muscle health. There was a weekly steroids and muscular dystrophy open label pilot study that looked at the safety. And here they were able to show some trends and improve muscle performance, but also an increase in lean muscle mass and reduction in fat. Beyond that, there was a medicine called Rusarlis or ATYR1940, and this was looking at tRNA synthetase, and this was in phase 1-2. It was completed, but there has not been further work on that particular product. And there have been other small molecules that have been considered.
So those are a lot of investigative therapies, very encouraging. Which one of these do you think is most promising and may soon be available to your patients? Or is it too soon to tell? Or is it the tongue twister medication that we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, so I'm probably most keen on some of these gene transfer therapies. I do think that these have a lot of promise, that they are somewhat intuitive that, if you're missing the gene and you replace it, that there's an opportunity there. I would love to see additional phase 3 trials kind of move forward for some of these programs that have been kind of stuck in these phase 1-2 clinical trials or have some of these preclinical products move in, because there's a lot of opportunity really across the limb-girdle muscular dystrophies, particularly for the autosomal recessive forms to allow them to replace the gene. And then I think there's more work and certainly opportunity in terms of steroid treatments and these small molecules to be developed at, particularly as supplemental agents to the gene transfer therapy. So lots going on. I'm pretty excited. I hope that we move through clinical trials and into clinical practice as soon as possible, but recognizing that, you know, testing for the safety and efficacies, it does take time, and folks need to be patient as they're kind of moving through that process.
It's all very encouraging news, and, you know, we'll stay tuned for new therapies. Thank you very much, Dr. Johnson. I'm glad we could spend some time talking about treatments. That's all the time we have for today. I would like to thank our expert, Dr. Johnson, for taking the time to speak with us today. And thanks to all our listeners for joining us. Hopefully, you're able to tune in to other podcasts in this series. There are a total of 2, as well as some of the many other types of CME programs we offer. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group, who, in support of improving patient care, is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, ACCME, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, ACPE, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center, ANCC, to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Sarepta Therapeutics, Inc., who provided an educational grant for this activity. Thanks for listening.